Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. True stories of addiction and recovery. It's a 12-step meeting on the air. And we have with us our friends from Gamblers Anonymous to share with us their experience, their strength, and their hope. And before I say hello to our first guest tonight, I got this thing in my, this magazine in my hand, which is just totally cool. We had a guy up here from Gamblers Anonymous probably about 4 months ago who was saying that one of his fantasies or dreams in recovery was to start his own magazine. And he actually did. And the magazine's called Inspire Your World. And what it is a... it's a magazine of philanthropy in corporate America where, you know, corporations do different things and, you know, the good stuff that they do that you never really get to hear about. And I just think that's the coolest thing, and I want to share that with the audience. You know, dreams can come true in recovery, and I just think that's tremendous. So first up from Gamblers Anonymous, we have our friend Ron. How you doing, Ron?
Good. My name's Ron P. I'm a compulsive gambler.
How you doing?
Good. I started gambling when I was 10 years old. I grew up in New York City.
Okay.
And I learned how to shoot dice on the street corners at night. So it was, I learned how to lie also when I was 10, because when you're 10 years old and poor and you have start winning money, how do you go home and tell your parents where your money's coming from?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to lie to them. You know, they thought I was the luckiest kid in the world. You know, they would see like a radio. Where did you get it? I found it. You know, but actually I bought it. So I had a, my lying started early.
Okay.
By the time I was in high school, I worked for a bookie just to make extra money. I was bringing in more money than my father was making.
Explain to me the day, a day in the life of a bookie.
Well, and where I worked for, after school, I went to his office.
It was all sports betting?
All sports betting. We had two phones, one on the right side, one on the left, and he gave you a sheet. If someone called on your right phone, let's say the Knicks were playing the Lakers, if someone called on the right phone, you gave him information telling him that the Knicks would cover. If someone called on the left phone, you told them that the Lakers would cover.
Okay.
So he was covering both sides. He had two ads out in the Post and the News and things like that.
Hmm.
And we got paid on the money that we were bringing in.
How could you advertise this illegal business and not get caught?
He was, I don't know how he did it. It was, you know, calling for sports information. It was in the Daily News and in the Post and the Times.
Okay.
Somehow I made it through high school. I went to college in Florida. And in Florida, I learned how to bet on high lie.
What is high lie?
High lie is a game. It's a southern game where they, it's a Shasta where they throw a ball against a wall and they have eight teams and in rotation and you're betting on which two in there, which two teams are going to come in. Which is, you can bet win, play, show. You can bet exact as it's a sport, but it's very heavy betting. And I learned how to do that when I was in college.
Okay, okay.
When I left college, I came back to New York. I got a job on Wall Street and I was good. My clients loved me. I wound up working in this one firm for 16 years. I was doing investments for our clients, and I was good at what I was doing. I made the money, and they loved what I did. But at night, I used to go to after-hour joints in the city and shoot craps. You know, they're illegal. I used to call them goulash joints or illegal places. You know,
goulash. What exactly is a goulash joint?
It's usually in a nice apartment building, things like that, and you go upstairs, and the whole room is poker tables, roulette wheels, dice tables.
But what's with the goulash?
It just is a name that was
right.
Picked up from the streets.
Okay.
And I used to go there, and I would bet money, you know, and shoot dice. And
did you win?
Most of the time, I did.
Okay.
I was a lucky gambler, at least I thought I was.
Okay.
Kept
you coming back for more?
Kept me coming back for more. I wound up marrying my childhood sweetheart.
Okay.
And, you know, my job on Wall Street was paying good, so we were having a nice life in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Atlantic City opened up, so we started going down once a month. And it turned out from once a month, it turned out to being twice a month, three times a month. By the end, I was going down there every weekend. And my weekend was Friday night after work to Sunday night, and sometimes Monday morning I drove straight to work.
Okay.
From there. But all the time, you know, my gambling was good, my gambling was bad, but I was into just shooting dice. My wife said I looked the happiest when I was on a crap table.
Hmm.
And I felt good. Well, one day I come into work and the FBI meets me.
Why would the FBI be meeting you at work if everything was going to plan here?
I gambled for 30-some-odd years. Last 3 years of gambling, I stalled from my clients.
Well, back up. Let's go back to the just starting out in Atlantic City. Did we just cover 30 years there? And
Progressively, it got worse.
Okay, let's back you up a little bit. Let's go back to Atlantic City, and we'll get to the FBI in a little bit. But what happens next? I know your wife said you looked happiest at a crap table. Okay, but what, I mean, did the bets get bigger? Did the action get faster?
Shooting dice was, I felt, nothing could touch me. I was in my own dream world. Everything was going good. I felt all powerful with dice in my hand. It felt like I was in control.
Were you getting high? I mean, was it like being high? I mean, help my audience understand what the attractiveness is here.
The attractiveness was the action. I had to be in action. I had to have bets on the table. It didn't matter if I won or lost. I just had to be shooting craps. And my hours at the table grew longer. It started out, you know, when I first was going down there, I'd spend a couple hours, a couple of $100. Turned out my betting, I was winning, so I was betting more and more. Then I opened up credit lines. I had credit lines out of the 13 casinos in Atlantic City. I had credit lines at 10 of them.
What kind of dollar figure are we talking in a credit line?
The smallest credit line I had was $20,000.
Wow. What was the most you had outstanding debt-wise at any given moment?
When I was arrested, I owed 4 casinos, each one totaling no less than $45,000.
Good God. Now, I guess you said the action. So it wasn't necessarily the winning then. It was the action.
It's being in action. It had nothing to do with winning. It had nothing to do with dollar amounts.
Although you were a lucky gambler, you said.
Yes.
It didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
Okay.
Winning or losing, I couldn't tell my wife when I was losing. It was a strange thing. When I was gambling, if I was losing, I'd still have that same happy face. I wasn't an angry gambler, you know. If I dropped money on the casino floor, I would come back and I'd lie to my wife. I'd say, you know, I won a little, lost a little. She had no idea I had the credit lines. So, you know, if we're going down to Atlantic City and I have $5,000 in my pocket, if I come back with $11,000, she's thinking that I won $6,000. She didn't know. I took out all my credit line for $20,000. So instead of being up $6,000, I'm down like $14,000.
Now, let me ask you a question about your relationship with your wife. How forthcoming were you with her about this stuff? Like you said, you were making good money at the time. Was it somewhat transparent to her for a while?
No, she had no clue. None of my friends had clues. I used to take my friends with me to Atlantic City.
How could she not know?
No one knew.
How?
Because compulsive, we're the best liars in the world.
Okay.
They believed everything we said. I'd look you straight in the face, and I would just convince you.
But wouldn't your wife be wondering where all the money went?
She was thinking that I was winning. Because when every time bills had to be paid, I would take money, I would go down to a casino and take money off my credit line.
So it's a shell game. You're paying off one.
I'm paying off one. And when you take out a credit line, you have 45 days to pay back a casino. So if I owe a casino $20,000 coming up to the 45th day and I don't have it, I would go to the next casino, take out $25,000, go to the first casino, pay them. Now I have another 45 days on $25,000, and now I have $5,000 in my hand to gamble with.
This must have taken a huge amount of mental energy. I mean, how much were you floating a month?
A little over, probably I'd say anywhere between $80,000 and $100,000 a month.
$80,000 and $100,000 a month you were floating.
Right, and no one knew. And outside I was calm, but it tore my inside apart so bad that they wound up taking 18 inches out of my intestines.
Good God, that's absolutely horrible.
Right. Everyone thought when that happened it was just the stress from my job on Wall Street. No one knew it was the stress that I was being from manipulating all the money and the stress from lying to everyone in my life. At this point, I'm married 16 years to my wife. And then one day, I come into work at 6 o'clock in the morning and there are two gentlemen waiting for me. And they introduce themselves as, "Hi, Ron, we're from the FBI."
Ouch.
Yeah, my whole world crashed. They were the ones to tell me I was a compulsive gambler. If you would have asked me 10 minutes before I met them if I was a compulsive gambler, I would have laughed at you. Even though I'd been gambling since I was 10 years old, they had on desk in front of me my whole life history. They told me for the last 9 years, the only vacations I ever took with my wife and my kid involved gambling, either casinos or racetracks. But it was all there in front of me. And then he told me what really hit hard was, "Ron, you have no funds left. All your bank accounts are frozen. The only money that you have is the money in your pocket." Now, how do you tell your wife of 16 years. Honey, guess what? We're broke. Oh, by the way, I'm going to jail for 2 years, and we have an 8-year-old son. How do you explain this to him? Well, I couldn't think of any way to explain it to her. So that day after the FBI left me on Wall Street, I tried to commit suicide.
Wow.
And then, by the grace of God, I remembered somebody who was in Gamblers Anonymous, and I called him.
How did you originally meet that person?
Just as a Saturday morning in a coffee shop. Sometimes we used to meet and talk, and, you know, he used to tell me all about compulsive gambling.
Did he know at the time that you had a problem?
He thought I might have had a problem, and he mentioned it to me, and I just brushed it off saying, no, I don't, because I couldn't tell anybody. And I called him up, and he told me to go talk to my wife.
Mm.
I had one other problem with my wife. My wife has panic attacks, so I was worried that this was going to throw her over the edge. And she took it very hard. She hated me. I mean, if the shoe was reversed, I would have hated her. I mean, it was just, you know, coming home, you know, how do you tell your son, hey, you know, dad's not going to be around for 2 years. He's going to jail.
Well, did you know for sure? I mean, this is probably before the trial that you were going to jail. I mean, did the FBI say, look, here's the deal. You're done and you're going away.
Well, the FBI laid it out in front of me and basically told me that they were still working on the numbers that I stole. And most likely had a good chance of going to jail.
How were you embezzling the funds? How did you do it at work? I mean, how did it
come? It was the simplest plan, and that's what got the bank I worked for upset. It's because of the trust nature. As I said, as compulsive gamblers, we're good liars.
Okay.
I handled personal accounts of high net worth individuals. My smallest account was $500,000. My largest account was $320 million of personal money that I handled on a day-to-day basis. I wrote checks from their accounts to pay down my credit line sometimes. And on their bank statements, they would see that I was paying down their Visa or paying their mortgage or paying this or buying a stock. And in reality, the check went to the casino.
Wow.
To pay off my debts. And this went on for close to 3 years. And when you write a check from a bank, somebody else has to authorize it. So just on my word, I would go to the next person over and say, hey, I have some checks in the system, just authorize it. And these people wouldn't even read the checks. They trusted me. They, you know, I worked there for 16 years. I built up a relationship with them. So they would just go into the computer and authorize all the checks, not even reading them. That on one part where it said on their statement, it would say, you know, paying Visa, and the check on the bottom would say Harris.
You know? Wow. This sounds awfully... it sounds so much like a film that was out not too long ago called Owning Mahoney with Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't know if you ever had a chance to see the film. A couple of heads are nodding in the room. You're telling that story. You really are. It's amazing. And I really would suggest you get an opportunity to check it out. You'd probably get a lot out of it. But please continue. I don't mean to digress.
And so then when I went to my lawyer and we were talking about the amount, he asked me, honestly, how much did you think you stole? So in all honesty, I looked him straight in the face. I said, I'm going to be honest with you, maybe $80,000 to $100,000. The bank stopped counting at $878,000. It's a figure that it took me a long time to believe that I actually took. Because in my mind, it was just, you know, I was just taking the money and, you know, as all good gamblers do, you know, when I make the big hit, I'm going to pay it back. I'm going to pay it back. Sure, but... that big hit never came. Or when it did, I went out for a bigger hit. I was living the dream world, you know, buying everything from my friends, living a great life. Great life I was living. I was living in Atlantic City. I mean, every weekend of my life was there.
How'd you come to find help after that conversation?
Well, he brought me to my first GA meeting on a Tuesday night in September. And after trying to commit suicide, I didn't know what GA was about. I didn't know anything about a 12-step program. I thought they were going to come in and tell me how I'm going to pay back all this money that I stole. It was just, and I didn't take to the program seriously in the beginning. I went there just to clear my mind. I was in GA 2 months before I went to prison.
So you had started the recovery process before going away.
Right. And in prison, I started to realize what GA is. And the prison I went to did not have Gamblers Anonymous. They had AA and NA.
Wow.
So I had to fight hard to get a GA room just so because there were other people in prison who needed help, I thought, also, and just to talk to some people. Because if you think prison isn't a place to gamble, there's more gambling in prison. They'll bet on the cockroaches crawling on the floor. And you know, you always hear that, but it's true. And they bet from anything from physical exercise to commissary money.
Mm.
And it's very hard in prison not to gamble because it's all around you.
Wow.
And like I said, today, well, tomorrow, the 18th, I'll be out of jail 3 years.
You'll be out of jail 3 years.
It feels good. I'm in GA now 5 years.
Okay.
That I haven't made a bet. My home life is better. It's not great.
How are the relationships with your wife and son?
With my wife, it's getting there. I mean, you know, there are times when I talk to her, she still doesn't trust some of the things I say, and she has every right not to. In the beginning, that used to get me mad. Like, if I was 20 minutes late getting home, I would tell her there's traffic, and she'd give me a look. Like, did you go somewhere? Did you go to OTB, or did you go someplace to place a bet? And I'm saying, and here I am trying to be totally honest, and she's not believing me, and I used to get very angry at that. So I called my sponsor, and he says, you know, look at this. What you've done in the past to her, should she trust you? And it brought me down to earth and says, you know, you're right. I just got to do what's good for me. And by my actions, she'll slowly, hopefully see and regain the trust. My son was very hard. It was, you know, I'm back. How long am I going to be back for? And I lied to him. And that's what hurt the most, because when you're away, I didn't miss the gambling when I was away. I missed actually being with my son, and that hurt more than anything else. Gambling, I'll tell my wife today, there's no greater feeling than having a pair of dice in my hands. I still say that today. That is just an unbelievable feeling. There's some board games that I play with my son that I can't roll the dice because I can't hold the dice in my hand, because as soon as I touch them, it throws me right back to Atlantic City. And it happened once when we were playing Monopoly. It was just the dice in my hand, and I grabbed it, and I just put it down, and I walked out of the room. My wife said, what's the matter? My son didn't understand. And I told my wife, and I said, it just brought the hair up on my arms, and I was in Atlantic City in a flash.
Wow. Ron, thank you so much for sharing with us. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.